Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Today's episode is sponsored by ByHeart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? ByHeart. ByHeart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at buyheart.com/podcast with codename Zibby20 for a limited time.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Philip Lopate is the editor of the Contemporary American Essay. He is the author also of, well, many, many books, but To Show and to Tell, The Craft of Literary Nonfiction, and 4 essay collections, Bachelorhood, Against Joie de Vivre, Portrait of My Body, and Portrait Inside My Head. He is the editor of the anthologies The Glorious American Essay, The Golden Age of the American Essay, The Art of the Personal Essay, which, by the way, was one of my school books and which I still have on my shelf today, and that was from like 20 or whatever years ago, so that was awesome, Writing New York and American Movie Critics. He was awarded a John Simon Guggenheim Fellowship, a New York Public Library Center for Scholars and Writers Fellowship, 2 National Endowment for the Arts grants, and 2 New York Foundation for the Arts grants. He is a professor of writing at Columbia University's nonfiction MFA program and lives in Brooklyn, New York.
Welcome, Philip. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. We're going to discuss your whole body of work, which is like astounding in its breadth and scope and everything. But your most recent is The Golden Age of the American Essay, 1945 to 1970. So welcome.
Thank you. This is part of a 3-set anthology of the American Essay. It's a crazy project that's taken me the last 4 or 5 years to do. And the first one was The Glorious American Essay, which was the whole arc of the American Essay. This one, The Golden Age, is really concentrating on the post-war period, 1945 to 1970. And the third one will be The Contemporary American Essay, which is the 21st century essay. And I know that moms are very busy. I'm not a mom. I have certain genetic limitations in that regard. But anyway, I think that even though these books are very fat, the individual selections are fairly short. So a mom on the run could read one at a time and then go back to all the many things that she's doing.
I like the marketing pitch. Very good. And I agree. I published an anthology with and have another one coming out. And that's what I keep saying to people. I'm like, you only have to read one essay at a time. It takes like, you could check your Instagram instead. It takes no, you know, it takes no time. So I agree.
Yeah, so the other thing about anthologies is that nobody reads them from cover to cover, from start to finish. You can jump around anything that you think would be enjoyable to you, you just latch onto that. So that was I wanted to do a real offering, a smorgasbord of all these different voices and make it as inclusive as possible.
I still get such a thrill. I feel like essays give you a peek into someone's consciousness that it's very hard to get somewhere else. And even in this, with like Joan Didion and Mary McCarthy and all these legends, Susan Sontag, just to see even what they were doing, like at their desk, or I finished writing this, or this is how I felt about it. I mean, I just think it's amazing. It's like you get to peek into someone's diary, even the more literary or intellectual essays, whatever. There's something just so personal, obviously, about them that over time, just, I don't know, it like gives me chills. I just love this as a form.
Yes, me too. I mean, I think what you said is so right, that there's something intimate about the essay. It's a conversation between the writer and the reader, as though the writer is leaning forward and whispering into the reader's ear, and meanwhile, tracking his or her own thoughts, you know? So there is something like a diary about it.
Yeah. Yes. Like a personal letter or something. They just didn't know me.
Yes. You know, that's so true. And one of the things that I did, especially in the first volume, The Glorious American Essay, was I tried to show how essays could appear in the form of a letter, mm-hmm. or even in the form of a speech, or even in the form of a newspaper column. So they're all letters, you know, in a sense, you know, from the writer to the reader. You know, Emily Dickinson, I wrote a letter to the world that did not write to me. Yes.
Exactly. Well, I've had your book, The Art of the Personal Essay. I feel like it was required in some class I took, and I've moved 8 million times, and it's come with me from place to place. So, you know, you've been like a part of the fabric of whatever library I've had. So
it's been my most popular and best-selling book, and you know, it became a kind of standard text in colleges and universities and even high schools. So, you know, one of the reasons that I did this new 3-volume project was that for years, I've been so identified with the Art of the Personal Essay. And publishers have said, do you want to update it? Do you want to revise it? And I said, no, let's leave it the way it is. You know, it is what it is, you know. But then I began to get the itch to do another anthology. Originally, it was supposed to be one anthology. And then it grew like topsy into 3 because I found so many interesting essays that it couldn't just be one, you know. But there's something about, I know you probably feel this when you edited your anthologies, there's something about doing an anthology that's very pleasurable because you're falling in love with other writers, you know. It's not all about you. I've done plenty of books that are just Philip Lope from beginning to end. But in this case, you know, I'm the maitre d' seating these various different writers, you know. And the main test for why I put an essay into one of these books was that I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put in something that I thought was important, but I disliked.
Yep.
So in a way, it's very personal because it's about personal taste. But in another way, it's not about my ego. It's about celebrating this beautiful work by other writers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I felt like, yeah, like I'm a hostess, like it's a party that I'm having, but I'm letting everybody in, right? They're all like sitting around my living room sharing their stories, but we can't really broadcast that to the world. So an anthology, the next best way.
And I think I have a different personality when I'm just reading or writing than I do when I'm doing an anthology, because when I'm reading for pleasure, if I don't like something, I can be very critical. Like, that's it. I don't have to finish every book. That's it for that book. But then when I put on my hat, that's the anthologist, I'm trying to see it from the writer's point of view more. I'm not so picky and scornful. I'm much more tolerant in a way. Different side of me is brought out.
Ah, the nice side, I guess.
Sweeter side.
The sweeter side. Well, I was really interested in this volume of it, in the way you analyzed sort of the rise and fall of the essay in American history and how you linked essayism and liberalism and how some, you know, historical moments were more ripe for this form and why, even linking it to, you know, overcoming the Nazis and the position versus Europe and the US and how this art form has sort of shifted over time. And I'm curious now where you see the essay in relation to sort of the greater macro, you know, nationalistic vibe of today.
Well, I definitely began to see volume two, the golden age of the American essay, as both a celebration of a time when essays were very welcome, and also as a debate about liberalism, you know, because it seemed to me in 1945, there was this golden moment of tolerance, you know, because America had triumphed over totalitarian governments. And there was a spirit of like, you know, the African-American soldiers were returning from the war. And there were all of these books and movies that basically the message was, you know, we're all part of one family. And, you know, anti-Semitism is bad. Racism is bad. Sexism is bad. Let's just welcome everybody as part of one family. And then there were cracks in liberalism and people started attacking liberalism from the left and the right. And so, you know, it went from this moment of all-inclusiveness to something that was much more crisis mode. And now, of course, we're going through a lot of crises and a lot of polarity and a lot of division. And I think one of the reasons that the essay at this particular moment is a key form is that people are confused. We're getting too much information and too little wisdom or understanding. So, and experts are no longer trusted. So therefore, what Virginia Woolf called the common reader goes to essayists who are trying to figure it out without being experts, trying to figure out what to make of this very confusing moment, you know? And one of the things about good essays is that the essayist is not just trying to write what his or her peer group thinks, but is trying to write individually what you really think, not what you're supposed to think. So it becomes a form for freedom to assess things that are problematic.
Interesting.
You know, so even if you are essentially a progressive and subscribe to the notion of political correctness, you still are allowed in the essay, which is a form identified with doubt, self-doubt, skepticism, and thinking against oneself, you're allowed to play out all the different possibilities, variations, and uncertainties. And that's the key word, if I could say, uncertainties. That is, we're living through a time of real uncertainty, you know? So, you know, I'm on the side of immigrants, of diversity, and so on. So I am not on the side of white supremacy, I could say. But that doesn't make me so unique, but it just means that, you know, I'm aware that not everybody thinks the way I do.
Interesting. Yeah, I liked how even in the introduction, you had a whole thing about the Black essay and all these different ways in which different voices were represented over time and what that does for the communities at large.
Yes, because I think one of the things that the essay can do, I think even more than the novel, is that minorities and different groups are drawn to it in order to articulate what it means to be in this minority. And so to some degree, it becomes a kind of pursuit of identity to this minority, but it also, like Richard Rodriguez has an essay called Hispanic, in which he doubts some of the cliches about the Hispanic. So you both have the right to talk about how you are part of a group and how you're not part of it, how you don't, you can't go along with the tribe, you know?
Yep.
Which I think is very refreshing.
I feel like, I don't know, just personally, and I know you're like the biggest writer ever, so I can't even like share my personal experience without feeling ridiculous about it. But I have been writing essays. Like that's how I process my thoughts. Like I've been writing and publishing essays since I was 14. And I feel like it's my way of sort of finding people in the world who might understand, making me less alone, but also the other people. And I feel like I feel like the essay format is such a, I don't know, it's just a way to process that so many people use, especially honestly in the motherhood space. I mean, there are so many essay sites, and I know we have Moms No Time to Write as like a Medium publication now too, but there's so many sites devoted to many moms and other, you know, maybe perhaps it's one of those groups that you discussed too, like dealing with a lot of stuff and trying to figure it all out. And that's how they do it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Absolutely. And as you know, during, let's say, the 1970s, you know, one of the aspects of feminism was women writing essays questioning the maternal instinct, let's say, you know, how, you know, mothers unconditionally love their kids and also sometimes really want to kill their kids, you know, or at least smack them.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about. Okay. All right. So. You know, I do think that some notion, you know, like the maternal instinct has a piece of reality, but it also has a piece of propaganda in it, you know, and so it needs to be deconstructed somehow. And that's one of the things that's happened, you know, in the last few decades, you know, is questioning what it means to be at the beck and call of another human being.
Interesting. So what is your typical day like? Like, do you wake up and write? Do you wake up and read? Do you research the essays? Are you always on the hunt for amazing essays to include in something? Like, do you just read the newspapers all day? Like, what is your day like?
Okay, I usually wake up, have a cup of coffee and some version of breakfast and read the newspaper. Okay. When I was doing the research for these three books, which went on for about 4 years, I would gather books together, and sometimes I would read three collections of essays a day, one in the morning, then take a break for lunch, then one in the afternoon, and then early evening, the third one. Okay. By that time, you know, I was ready for a nap. What can I tell you? I mean, and on a good day, I would find, let's say, one or two essays that I thought, okay, this could really work, you know. A glorious day would be if I found three essays. Sometimes I found no essays, you know. It's like, it was a little bit like cruising. I was ready to fall in love, you know, and it wasn't happening sometimes, you know. It was a resistance between me and the writer, you know. So a lot of reading. But I will say that even after the project was completed, I still need to read every day. I just need that time to process somebody else's thoughts. You know, Charles Lamb, the great essayist, said, "I cannot think. Books think for me." It's very hard just to sit down and try to think, you know. So sometimes I need a text to bounce off of in order to think.
I like that.
So for instance, you know, in volume two, I was reading this A Liberal Imagination by Lionel Trilling. And he says in the introduction that at the moment there's a liberal consensus, you know, that basically everybody's agreed on certain things and that this has a good side and this has a bad side. So the phrase, the liberal consensus, you know, was lodged in my brain about 3:30 in the morning, and woke up and said, yes, the liberal consensus, you know, that's one of the ways I can construct this book, you know, if there's a liberal consensus, you know, what does that tell me? So, but I didn't just think of it. I needed Lionel Trilling. I needed somebody to bounce off of, okay? So the moms may not always have time to read, but I'm somehow always find time. And sometimes it irritates my wife and daughter. Well, it's a form of withdrawal, you know.
I sometimes irritate my husband too. You know, I'm always reading, especially at night. Once I finish all the emails and work and interviews, and like, it's for me, it's the most relaxing thing. I can't go to bed without it. Like, it's, I look forward to it all day, you know. And then, but that's also the time to catch up and like, how was your day? And blah blah blah. And I'm like, well, now I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna read another.
I'll tell you after I finish reading. Yes, yeah, exactly.
But yes, I am familiar with that feeling. And I don't mean to leave him out, you know, but he, you know, it was interesting because he was like, well, it, you know, it, when you read, it's like it like takes me completely away. He's like, you might as well not even be in the room. Like you're not paying attention. You're, you know, and I'm like, well, honestly, I, you know, here I am. And I'm like reading whatever. I'm in the middle of like Venice right now in my head. Right. Like I'm like in the middle.
Exactly. Well, I think I started reading as a survival tactic because I came from a family, two parents and four kids, all pretty loud and articulate. And the only way that I could at all escape was to put a book in front of my face, which was allowed in that family.
What number were you?
You were allowed to not participate or shout or argue, you know, if you were reading. So, yeah, I started reading a lot.
Wow. I think that's why I have four kids myself. And my fourth kid is a boy. And he started reading like, I don't know, 4.5, 5. He reads a lot. He reads better than anybody in the whole family, probably. I think he's just like looking for some peace and quiet because it's such
exactly. Exactly. Survival mechanism. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Oh my gosh. Okay. So after this sort of heroic project, what are you going to do next?
I think what I'm going to do next is I've written a lot of essays since my last collection, which was called Portrait Inside My Head. I had done these four collections, Bachelorhood, Against Gerard de Rivre, A Portrait of My Body, and Portrait Inside My Head. And I'd also done other collections, like a book of my film writings called Totally, Tenderly, Tragically. So I've written a lot of personal essays. I've written a lot of literary criticism, and I've written a lot of movie criticism. So now I'm going to go through this pile and see if I can put together, we'll say two collections. One will be personal essays and memoir pieces, and the other will be books and movies.
Interesting.
That's what I'm thinking of now.
I love that.
Okay. So it's an interesting project because sometimes you have an assignment and you write something, like let's say a book review, and it's perfectly fine for the occasion. But is it good enough to put inside a book? Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. So I'm reading all this stuff with, I hope, a measure of detachment, saying, you know, this is really good. This is just okay, you know, and seeing what will survive and what won't, you know, to try to, because I've got all the material, you know? And I'm sure I'm going to be writing new essays along the way. So I've got the material. I've just got to see what deserves to live and what's going to, you know, be buried.
Wow.
That's my next project.
You could even do a third. It's just called the reject pile, you know.
Oh my God. You know, that's so funny because I once had this fantasy of starting a magazine called Kill Fee.
Yeah.
And this would be a magazine. It would be a magazine for writers, but my wife is a graphic designer, and it would be artists as well and architects, you know, who did projects that, you know, were rejected, you know. And I'm sure there'd be a lot of fascinating stuff, you know, in that, you know. And I certainly have had my share of kill fees.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Well, if you want to do it, call me up. I love that idea.
Well, we could co-edit it, but, you know, it needs a banker or some patron to give us some money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, put a pin in that idea. I think that could be really fun. Could even be just an anthology instead of a magazine, right?
Exactly. It could be a one-shot, yeah. One-shot something or other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I love that. Kill Fee and anthology, right? So funny.
Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of times we do things that are commissioned, that we care about, and for whatever reason, it just doesn't work out. You know, screenwriters know this all the time. They write screenplay after screenplay and it doesn't get the green light, you know? And sometimes you read them and you think, well, this was a good screenplay. What was the problem with it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's exciting. That could be fun. Okay, great. Get right to work. So now when you're going through all of your work, you have to put some in the kill fee pile and then.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to kill it myself.
My kill fee pile is probably a lot bigger than yours because I bet a lot more of yours got accepted.
I'm not so sure about, you know, you're being modest, but anyway, all writers go through the same thing. And all writers go through uncertainty and, you know, this feeling of, oh, am I bluffing? Am I really a writer? You know, and ultimately the world treats you like, says, yes, you're a writer. So shut up about that, you know, and just do your work, you know. But for the longest time, there is this kind of anxiety.
Yeah. This whole imposter syndrome, I feel like.
Yes. Exactly.
Most authors on the podcast are like, oh, I don't have any advice. I'm not a real author. I'm like, I just read your book. I'm pretty sure you are, but.
No, I have advice. I mean.
Yeah, tell me your advice.
My advice is to read deeply in the form, not just contemporary work, but, you know, older work by dead authors as well, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's already been there, you know, and all of these moves you can really learn from. So read, read, read. And the other one is sit, sit, sit. You know, there's a Yiddish word called zitzfleisch. You know, you got to be able to apply your buttocks to the chair and put in the hours, which means, in a way, to accept a certain kind of, I don't know if the word is loneliness or isolation, but I have known students who were very talented who did not become writers because they couldn't do this act of sitting and being alone with themselves. And I've known other writers who were students who were somewhat less talented, but they could put in the hours. Yes. You put in a million hours and it gets better.
Very true.
You do revisions and you get smarter.
Yes. Also, I feel like if you're sitting all day writing, you're not really alone. I mean, I don't feel like you're alone, right?
You're not alone. You know, you're with your prospective understanding reader. This reader who you may have no one in your life who you feel understands you as well as this reader.
Yeah. The reader, the characters, you know. It's a party, you know.
It is a party. Yes, you're not alone. That's what very well put.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on this show. This was so I wanted to say entertaining, but that seems like a flippant thing to say.
I like entertaining, you know. That's another thing that I discovered as a writer, which was that at first when I was writing, I thought, well, why should I entertain this self-satisfied bourgeois reader, you know? And then I realized I myself wanted to be entertained as a reader. And that was not an insult, you know, that we need to entertain our readers. We need to engage them. It doesn't mean we need to flatter them. Sometimes we need to provoke them. But that's another kind of stimulation. We need to be entertaining.
Okay. So then I'll keep my word. I won't edit it out.
Absolutely.
Great. All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll get back in touch about the anthology.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Great talking to you.
Bye, Philip.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at zibbyowens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.